Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. By PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines modern technology, convenient packaging, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 234, February 10th, 2016. We tune the transmitter with a light bulb. Hello, everybody. It's K9 EID in the Ozarks, and this is Ham Nation. We have a wonderful show tonight. We have a lot of missing people, and we miss those people, but we got a lot of good stuff tonight. So you want to get your pencils and paper, you might want to take notes. But Amanda and Jeff have caught the flu. Now, that's not fun for somebody that lives in the great city of Denver, where they had big eruptions today downtown, proclaiming their win with the Broncos. That was cool, but they weren't there. They're in bed, I guess. That's really sad. And George is in Florida. He's down there stirring it up at Orlando. But look who we have. We have Valerie's with us tonight to open. Valerie, how are you doing? You been doing any DXing, climbing towers, or what are you doing?
Oh, it's too cold to climb towers. We do have our 40-meter full-size Yagi stuck pointing due south, hoping for a nice day to at least turn it to Europe. But I just, maybe I know somebody or I have the in, but I just got my QSL cards from Palmyra. The boys are all back. They're safe, including Jerry, and they made over 75,000 QSOs. So these start to look for these in the mail. The donors are going out first, and then the OQRS. So watch your mailbox for your K5P cards.
Yay. All right. She's going to be watching the chat room, so give her some questions that we can do at the end. And George is here tonight. George, how you doing? You got your soldering iron ready to go, and you're going to do some stuff with Randy, I think, right?
Yeah, I've got a video tonight from Randy. I tell you, Bob, it is. I wish I had that soldering iron on right now because it's been cold down here. I was outside, and it was 39 degrees this morning. I know that's not cold to you northerners, but you know, that's really bone-chilling cold to us down here. And I had to work outside. Fortunately, I was the one standing on the ground, and there were two other guys climbing the tower.
Okay. Well, they have to have somebody to tell them what to do down on the ground and hand them rules. Oh, that's great. And Don is here. And, of course, it's been Mardi Gras week. I can just imagine how much fun you've had, Don. Let's go see what Don's up to.
Uh-oh. Hey, look at there. There's the King Cake baby making the HF contacts with the 7600 in the background. Yeah, we're just Mardi Gras was wrapped up yesterday. In fact, it wrapped up at midnight. And if you've never seen it, it's amazing how they actually end Mardi Gras. There are probably 15 or 20 New Orleans police officers on the biggest horses you've ever seen in your life, traveling right down Bourbon Street, and right at the stroke of midnight, they have bullhorns, and they're proclaiming that Mardi Gras has come to an end. Please clear the streets. please go home. And of course, nobody goes home, but that's the end of Mardi Gras. And you can see King Cake Baby's hanging out right here too. And speaking of other people hanging out that are just as cute as the King Cake Baby, we've got Dr. Tamitha Scove with us tonight in Newsline, in the Newsline video. So it's good to have Dr. T back. Bob, let's kick the show off and see what's going on, shall we?
Okay. Well, you know, we started this Audio Alley segment a few weeks ago, and I just continue to get just scores of emails, and I love them all. And they're becoming questions. Let's see what I get here today. And we're going to get around to all of them. I got a really nice one that they want me to talk about plosives and using microphones and all of that. And we're going to do that. So don't miss each week. We're going to take care of these requests. But I got a request that went to the top of the list. And it's a guy that got his license. He got a transmitter. I think it came from his grandfather. And he doesn't know how to tune it, and he's afraid to get on the air. Now, this is really sad, because when we have classes and we teach each of us how to get your license, there's a huge step that is kind of missing today. In the days that Don and George, Gordon, and maybe you, Valerie, we had an Elmer, what we call an Elmer, a teacher that would come and help us and show us. That's missing today in a lot of cases, because today they give you a handy talkie and stick you out in the crowd. No, there's a lot more to it. And so what we're going to do is this was a lot of work. I took out the 7600. I took out the 7800. Had to pull all that out of here. And I put down another one of my ICO rigs. By the way, I told you last week it was coming. Well, it's here. If you didn't get your electric radio today, you will. If you're not subscribed to it, please do. Because the article is in there. And I wrote an article on how to put push-to-talk in these ICOs or any other kind of rating that had a rotary switch. But anyway, I had to put all, it took me all day yesterday, but it's worth it. Now, what we're going to do, and we're going to do it the way I did it in 1956, and sometimes I still do, I use a light bulb. This is a 60-watt light bulb. And here we go. We're going to show you what's going on. I'm going to have to switch all of the cameras and make this work first. I want to make sure. Yeah, that's okay. All right. This is an ICO. It's a little 60-watt novice transmitter. And this transmitter, there we go. This transmitter has a 6146 tube in it. And here's what we have to do to get all this going. First of all, we have an outboard VFO. This is a separate box that adjusts the frequency. And since we're not hooked up to the outside, we can dial it in on a receiver. I've got it on 3885. But that plugs into the transmitter. And I even made a drawing here for you, my wonderful little eighth grade drawings. But I think you can make heads or tails of them. That VFO goes into the transmitter in the back, an RCA cable, and it feeds the oscillator. And what we're going to do here is we're going to put this in a tune position, put the meter switch in the grid, and we have to then tune the grid. That's the grid of the driver tube, and we do that. And watch the meter, got to do it for maximum. And then we do the drive. And we can get, there's 5 mils, but we only want about 3 mils. You look up what the tube that you're using, and usually in 6146, and most tubes, it'll be 2 to 4 mils. And we have the grid drive set. Now what we're going to do is take this meter switch down to the plate. And what's going to happen now, now listen to this one. You got to be really careful. When you put this into the transmit, have your hand on the plate tuning. That's the plate tuning of the final amplifier, because it's going to draw very much excessive current. You might even be able to hear the power supply. It buzzes, the transformer physically buzzes for just a second. And if you leave it like that, drawing a lot of current, you will probably wipe out the power supply, wipe out the final tube. You definitely will blow a fuse. So what we're going to do is when we go into final, we have the grid drive. That's all set. When we go into transmit, you're going to dip the plate. And what we mean by dipping the plate is minimum current of the final amplifier. This is a capacitor that's tuning the plates of that final. And we're going to dip that minimum current the minute we turn it on. And you'll see it, maybe hear it. Here we go. And we want to dip it. Drawing about 40 mils. Now, the antenna comes in through this capacitor, and we're going to load it. But what you do is you load just a little bit, little bit. Now dip it, and you'll notice when I dip it, then it gets the brightest. We're going to put a little bit more to the antenna, and we have to dip that and continue. Load up another 10 or 20 mils and dip it. And keep going. Load up a little bit more. Minimum. Dip it. We want to get up to, the meter even tells you a limit here. We're going to get up to about 120 mils and dip it. Go back and check the grid after you've done all this, because it might not have stayed, and it didn't. So we're going to bring it up about 3. And that's okay. I mean, anywhere from 2.5 to 4. But I like to stay within the specs about 3 mils. Back and check that. We're doing 120 mils. You always want to check to make sure that it's minimum plate current. Because if you let it get excessive plate current, number one, you're going to lose your output, but you're going to blow your finals eventually. If I left that up there at any time, why, we would have problems. And again, we've got a VFO. Set it to frequency we need. Have the oscillator. And we tune the grid of the driver, and then we set the drive for it, and then tune the plate. Now, one thing I forgot to say in the beginning is we're going to set the band switch. We're going to put it on the band we want, so the VFO is on there. Like a dummy, I should have told you that. But we're setting on 80 meters, 75 meters, and that band switch actually selects the taps on the coil that feeds the antenna, and of course that the final. That's all resonant. The final plate capacitor, the coil in the antenna. That all has to be resonant. And that's how we do it. That's how you tune up a tube transmitter. And it's you know, people ask me a lot, why are you hanging around on all that AM junk? You know what? I do it because it's fun. We don't have to do this. All of the new stuff today, we simply let it be. The circuits today, they just work. And get this thing all squared back here. It's just more fun to do that. At least it is for me, and I've been doing it for 60 years. Yes, I enjoy the new stuff today, but... It's just kind of fun to play with this old stuff. All the stuff you see me behind me, that's all tube stuff. Most of it's been with me for 50, 60 years, and it's just fun to do all of that. So I wanted to share that with you. I know that a lot of you won't ever have to tune all that stuff up, but there you are. It gives you a little insight. Please send me your questions or things that you want to do. We're going to get into some other things here next week that I had some nice questions on, some microphone plosives, how to use a microphone, how to address it, and so on. So I hope you're getting some good of this. And, you know, I think you are, because of all of the emails, and I love them. You keep them coming. And we'll make it all. I'll go from there. George, I bet you've used a light bulb to tune up a few transmitters in your day. What, am I right?
Actually, the last time I did one like that was probably on 27 megahertz. I've had access to meters, so I haven't needed to use a light bulb, but I have seen actually a dummy load at a 5 kilowatt AM station before that had, it was either 6 or 8 of the big beacons from a tower light that were kind of like in a hanging in a wooden frame, and they were all strapped together and connected. So that was their dummy load. And I never saw it with 5 kilowatts into it, but I imagine it glowed pretty good.
I'd like to go on record right now as saying that George and I have never, ever been together at a radio station before. So I was not that dummy load. I just like to go on record.
That is true. That is true. Okay. Bob, that was a great segment. Now, let me just say, excellent information. And one more reason that you should have a logbook and write things down. When you tune that transmitter, write down your frequency and your meter readings. Then you can come back a year from now and tell if maybe your tube's getting a little weak or if something's changed. It's great information to have, and you can kind of spot a failure coming in advance.
George, I do have a logbook. It's still done with pencil. Valerie, don't beat up on me too bad, Valerie. But I do all this because you're right. I keep all the logs of where the meters are, what current is, what band, and all that. So, all right. Well, let's hear about the new modern stuff, though, George, from ICOM, huh?
Discover D-Star this season and operate over the Internet Gateway through repeaters. Uplink your local repeater, downlink from a remote repeater, and enjoy clear audio as you communicate with friends across the globe. Choose from 5 fun color options with the ID51A+. This D-Star dual bander features integrated GPS, free downloadable RSMS1A Android app, near-me repeater function for D-Star as well as analog repeaters, and it's available in classic black, sunset orange, passion pink, ultraviolet, and lime. If you're just starting out in D-Star, check out the ID880H. Features include VHF, UHF, dual band functionality, one band at a time, good menu structure and easy programming, and fast multiple scanning for maximum reception. Interested in hands-free D-Star operation? Hit the road with the ID5100A. This radio offers optional Bluetooth capability, large backlit screen for high contrast viewing, and 50 watts of output power on both VHF and UHF. Limited shack space? No problem. The IC7100 base station is a great compact D-Star option. It covers HF, 6 meters, VHF, and UHF. Enable control head and touchscreen for quick intuitive operation, large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it's perfect for multiband and all-mode communications. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's D-Star radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, you can learn how you could win the monthly grand prize drawing, which for February is that nice ICOM ID51A+ dual band, dual watch handy talkie with built-in GPS. It's analog and D-Star, DV and FM repeater search functions, micro SD card slot, and a lot more. And you can get it in your choice of color. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And Bob, you were talking a moment ago about logbooks and keeping them analog style. Well, there's a couple of mine right there. And they'll be chock full mostly of meter readings. When I calibrated my frequency counter with WWV, what date I replaced the rope on my 40-meter antenna out there, and just all kinds of, notes on what went on. So I can tell you which is a good rope and which is not a good rope now because I wrote it down in here. Well, this week we've got a video from Randy, K7AGE, who was doing a little rebuilding of his shack and decided to bring us along for part of it.
Hi, Randy, K7AGE. I thought my next video was going to be how to hook up the mixer to my radio, but I've decided to do another video with a tip of how I deal with the audio cables going in and out of the rear of the radio. Let's see what that's all about. Many of the radios today offer an accessory connector on the rear of the radio, which provides pins for audio in, audio out, and push to talk, as well as maybe some other features depending on your radio. So the accessory connector many times is either a DIN or a mini DIN connector. Now these are small, they're 3/8 to a half inch in diameter, and they can have between 6 to 13 pins. Well, 13 pins on one of these little connectors makes it really difficult to solder wires to. I'm going to show you the way I connect to these, which is much easier. So this is what a mini DIN plug looks like. This one happens to have 6 pins, it's about 3/8 of an inch in diameter, and you can imagine trying to solder wires on the back side of this to be rather difficult. So here's a hint, not what this video is about, but if you do choose to solder your own little mini DIN plugs, I recommend getting a matching mini DIN socket. And before you start soldering, plug the plug in into the socket. So what this will do for you is that the plugged into the socket will help hold the pins in proper alignment while you solder them. The pins are just set in plastic, and the heat from your soldering iron, if you're a little too slow or not fast enough, it can actually move the pins around, and basically you'll ruin the connector. So by having it all aligned, quick soldering, let it cool down, and then unplug it will help maintain the pins in alignment. So what this video is about is the hint that I don't solder those little connectors. I buy a breakout cable. So what this is a cable that has a connector on one end, and on the other end, it has a wire for each of the connectors. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It has a foil shield that wraps all around the cable, as well as a shield drain wire that you can use for shielding and grounding. Now, this makes it a lot easier, because now I don't have to solder this end. I just have to deal with this end here. Now, let me show you what I do with this end. So what I do with these, with the breakout cable, is that I wire it up to connectors on a box. This is one I built for my Kenwood TS-2000 many, many years ago. This is a 13-pin, I think DIN is a little bit larger than that last connector. And I make a box, and I put a whole bunch, in this case, RCA connectors on the front here. And now it makes it really easy to make hook signals in and out of the TS-2000, because all I need is an RCA plug. So here's the drawing of what the breakout box is. I show the box with all the connectors. I've labeled them, and I've numbered them 1 through 12, I guess it is, and show the cable goes off to the radio. And here I show the color code, color of the wire, the pin, and what functions on the wire. Now, you see a lot of pencil marks on here. This is because this cable from MFJ came with a little chart that told what all the colors were. Well, turned out they were all wrong. So if you get a color chart, it's worth checking ahead of time. So what you have to do when you get your cable, because it may or may not have a color code to pin chart with it, and even if it does, I would double check it. So you get your ohm meter, and you connect one end to the wire, and the other end lead, you go through all the pins until you see either 0 ohms, or if your meter has a continuity tester, you'll hear a beep, and you write all those down. Now you know which pin number goes to which color, because the other end of the wire you're going to wire up to your jacks. So this is what the inside of the box for my Kenwood radio looks like. Cable comes in with strain relief, a bunch of connectors, and just basically wire everything over. And what I actually did was on the main audio output, I actually wired that with a jumper to 2 connectors in case I wanted to use it in 2 places. You know, maybe for a sound card interface and maybe to feed the input to an audio recorder. So that's kind of handy. So this was just a little box. I put 12 connectors on there, not knowing, just put everything in. If you just want to build a simple one, like say with that 6-pin cable, that's a good use for the Altoids boxes. You can run the cable in one end and mount some 2 or 3 connectors on the far end, and I got yourself a nice little interface box for your radio. So one more thing before I finish this video up, I'm going to tell you where you can buy these cables. MFJ sells these cables in different connector types. This table shows 5, 6, 8, 13-pin, microphone, various connectors to bare wires. I had actually had to buy this 6-pin mini DIN cable from MFJ directly as I was unable to locate a dealer. So I hope that is useful information to you when you have to deal with these little tiny DIN and mini DIN high density cables. I don't like soldering to them. I buy the breakout cables. So hopefully next time we'll hook up the mixer. Thanks for watching. Randy, K7AGE.
Thanks for that, Randy. Yeah, having a breakout box or some easier way than soldering a bunch of different wires into a DIN plug, or let me rephrase that, trying to solder a bunch of wires into a DIN plug is a very good idea. You know, last week I asked a question, which of the following precautions should be taken when measuring circuit resistance with an ohm meter? And your choices were A, ensure that the applied voltages are correct, B, ensure that the circuit is not powered, C, ensure that the circuit is grounded, or D, ensure that the circuit is operating at the correct frequency. Well, we had a winner, and that's Mike Greb, AC2RK, and he said that the answer is B, ensure that the circuit is not powered. Good idea, because when you're measuring resistance with an ohm meter, you never want voltage on that circuit. You'll blow up your meter. And the ohm meter actually, on an old analog meter, is generally the only thing that requires the battery that you put in that meter is. So I can put a little voltage out and measure ohms. Congratulations, Mike. We're going to send you 50 feet of DX Engineering 400 max cable. You'll enjoy this cable. And, you know, what ham has too much coax? I don't know of any. Anyway, let's give away another 50 feet of this for next week. I've got another question. This one comes from the technician exam. And it is, what is the component in, or what is component 4 in figure T2? Well, this is figure T2. It's A, a variable inductor, B, a double pole double throw switch, C, a potentiometer, or D, a transformer. What is component 4 there? If you think you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might be next week's winner of 50 feet of DX Engineering 400 max coaxial cable. And now I think, well, Don, why don't you come in here and catch us up to date?
I can do that. I got a quick question. Does that have those cool new Hi-Zoot DX Engineering connectors on the end of that 50-foot cable? Yes, look at that.
It sure does, with the perfectly shrunk heat shrink on it that you were telling me about.
Yeah, I can tell you from experience, if those things aren't put on there perfectly, the heat shrink, I mean, they will actually go back and put it through the heater again and move it and make sure that it's exactly flush. They're so persnickety there, you'd think that, I don't know, they just love DX Engineering. And so while I sit here and ponder that thought, let's get the news of the week, shall we, from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1997, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, February 10th, 2016. Amateur Radio has lost three inspiring women. We have this team report.
Rose Shure, who became the chairman of the audio products manufacturer Shure Incorporated after the death of her husband Sidney in 1995, has died in Chicago. The company, founded by Sidney Shure in 1925 as an outgrowth of his hobby in amateur radio, began as a small mail-order distributor of components for homebrew radio builders. Shure later got into manufacturing of audio components and, during World War II, supplied microphones to the U.S. military, including headsets and noise-canceling microphones. Dubbed the Microphone Maven in her obituary in the Chicago Sun-Times, Rose Shure married Sidney Shure in 1954 and, in the decades that followed, helped deliver mics to the hands of presidents as well as performers, from Franklin Roosevelt to Elvis Presley and, of course, to hams everywhere. Rose Shure was 95. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Mary Harding, a wireless operator who worked for the Bletchley Park Codebreakers in Britain during the Second World War, has died in Britain.
Mary Harding, born Dorothy Mary Thompson, was from Keynsham in Somerset. She had worked as a Morse code slip reader and learning wireless techniques and code as a young volunteer for the war effort. In her memoir, Mary described her assignment at Bletchley Park like this. It turned out that we were a nucleus for setting up signal communication using high-speed Morse virtually worldwide. Many of the messages in German were given to the code breakers, making accuracy paramount. The work at Bletchley Park was credited with shortening the war by 2 years. Mary Harding died on the 19th of January, just days after she had turned 93. Her daughter Sarah added, Mary Harding passed her legacy on to her daughters years later when she and her husband David raised their family. Sarah told the newspaper, one of the first things she taught us two daughters was Morse code. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH in Nottingham in the UK.
And lastly, the ARRL has lost a beloved member of its extended family. Evelyn Gauzens, W4WYR, longtime vice director and honorary vice president, became a silent key in Florida January 31st. She had been the ARRL Southeastern Division vice director for more than 20 years and was co-founder of the Miami Tropical Hamboree, which she chaired for 45 years. She received numerous awards and in 2012 was inducted into the CQ Amateur Radio Hall of Fame. Our thoughts and prayers go out to all who knew these three amazing ladies. Flint, Michigan isn't the only city affected by lead in the water supply.
A group of amateur radio volunteers responded recently to a crisis in one Ohio community by showing up without their radios. They needed their hands free instead to help distribute bottled water, safe drinkable water for more than 8,000 residents of Sebring, Ohio, who'd learned on January 18th that their drinking water had become tainted with a high lead content. By January 22nd, Mahoning County Aries Emergency Coordinator Wes Boyd, W8IZC, had activated Aries to assist the Ohio and Mahoning County Emergency Management Agencies in distributing the water in Sebring. The radioless radio operators were welcomed by the Red Cross and the Emergency Management Agency personnel, who put them to work immediately distributing pallets of the bottled water. When the weekend came, another call went out for help, and this time, even more Aries volunteers showed up from neighboring counties. Officials report that the volunteers were able to move more than 166 pallets of water over a six-day period. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO in Valparaiso, Indiana.
And finally, one Arkansas club is celebrating its 100th year by giving a gift to a lady named Fifi. Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, explains.
What better way to celebrate your 100th birthday than to give a gift to someone else, perhaps a somewhat younger but distinguished military veteran? In this case, the centenarian is the Amateur Radio Club of the University of Arkansas, W5YM, and the gift recipient is Fifi, the noted B-29 Flying Fortress that served the nation honorably during World War II. The historic aircraft is in the process of being restored, and members of the Rockwell Collins Amateur Radio Club are setting up a radio operator's position on board. The gift from the hams at the University of Arkansas should fit right in. They're presenting Fifi with a J-37 telegraph key, also known as the Mae West key, named in tribute to the shapely entertainer so popular during the war years. The key itself was notable in its own right for the remarkably curvy indentations on its base. Fifi, by the way, is still flight-worthy, and now with the Smith-Irwin Memorial Radio Operator position nicely equipped with the J-37 telegraph key, the aircraft will be taking to the skies carrying just a little more history on board. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, in Topeka, Kansas.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for over 37 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 73, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
The sun continues to fire off these mini solar storms that bring us brief aurora shows if you know when and where to look. And a southern coronal hole finally gives us a promise for some sustained fast wind. Those stories and more in the news this week. Despite being pretty flare quiet, the sun has been extremely active over the past couple weeks. It's been spitting off lots of little mini solar storms and some filament eruptions too, like this gorgeous one that occurred on the 9th. This one should be going kind of northeast of us and go past by Earth around the 13th. But we've had a lot of other eruptions, some of them Earth-directed, some of them not, like this gorgeous one that spit off just yesterday and is now headed toward the Spitzer spacecraft. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see we've been well below the M-flare threat level for quite some time now. We actually have had a few active regions that look like they were showing signs of life, but as soon as they showed signs of life, they die back down again. So it's kind of kept us popping flares right around the C-class level, and that's going to continue for the indeterminate future. So you amateur radio operators should be very, very happy. We won't have any radio blackouts to report or anything that looks like it's going to cause us any trouble over the next week. Switching to our solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are calming down from one of those mini solar storms, and it looks like we are grazing the edge of some fast wind. We keep popping in and out of it, so that's going to give us about an unsettled conditions pretty much for the next few days. NOAA is giving us about a 30% chance of a minor storm at high latitudes, but only about a 15 to 20% chance of active conditions at mid latitudes. Then around the 12th, we have that filament eruption I showed you earlier. That should be going northwest or northeast of us, rather, and that should be giving us bumping up our possibility for storm conditions up to about a 30 to 35% chance of a minor storm at high latitudes, and at mid latitudes, maybe about a 25% chance of activity. Still, nonetheless, we're expecting unsettled conditions until we get to about the 15th, and that's when we're hoping to see some of that fast wind from that southern coronal hole actually give us some decent storm activity. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, we really are very quiet, despite the fact that we have a lot of active regions on the Earth-facing disk right now. None of them are growing. None of them look like they're any M-flare players. NOAA's giving us only about a 5% chance of an M-class flare over the coming days, with it dropping down to about a 1% chance. So we really don't have any worries out there. So you amateur radio operators and GPS operators should be very happy. There's no issues in sight for you guys in terms of flares. So this week, activity looks to be pretty much unsettled. We've had a lot of mini solar storms that keep firing off to the west of us or to the east of us, but not a lot that's really in the Earth strike zone. So this means that we have had just tiny bits and pieces of aurora here and there, but not too much going on outside of that. We also are grazing the edge of some fast wind. We're popping kind of in and out of it, which, again, will just kind of keep us unsettled. So you amateur radio operators, you should kind of hear some noise on the bands, but hopefully it's not too much to prevent you from being able to have some decent communication, and you GPS operators are probably pretty happy because there's probably no disturbances at all for you. On top of that, we have a lot of activity on the disk in terms of active regions, but not a lot of M flares or really any flare activity at all, and this should continue. So again, we're not seeing a whole lot going on, but things may change later in the week when we get a chance for some more fast wind that could give us some sustained activity. Till then, I guess we'll have to stay on our toes and keep watching the sun. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Thank you, Dr. T. Nice to have you back. Backtracking just a sec to the story about Fifi and the Morse code key. If you ever get a chance to see Fifi fly, you really should. I saw Fifi fly here in New Orleans, and it is amazing to see a B-29. It's the only one that's flight-worthy right now. They're in the process of restoring another one, but that's the only one that's flight-worthy in the world, and that is the plane that dropped the bombs on Japan in World War II, the atomic bombs. So it's not the actual plane, but it's the type. It was a B-29. So if you ever get the chance to see Fifi and hear her and see her fly, it's just, you really should. It's just amazing. All right, let's talk about PillPack. You know, I used to take a whole bunch of prescription meds back when my health was bad, but I lost a lot of weight, and now my health is a lot better, and I don't take all those prescriptions anymore, but I still take a lot of over-the-counter stuff, and that is where PillPack comes in, because whether you're taking prescriptions or over-the-counter, you probably still have a whole bunch of bottles either in your bathroom, or ours is in the kitchen. And this is a much more elegant solution than having a whole bunch of pill bottles laying around. Plus, everything is right here. And as you see right here, everything is listed on the back, and you have individual packets with the name of your med on the packet. And then you can actually see through it and see just exactly what it is you're taking and match it up to the picture. This is the future of pharmacy. It's PillPack, and you can get it right now. PillPack will deliver your meds and vitamins pre-sorted in these easy-to-tear packages labeled with the date and time for each dose, so you can get rid of the Monday-to-Sunday pill box. Oh, man, I hate those things. And you go on vacation, you just, you know, rip off a week's worth or however long you're going to be gone and throw it in your bag, and they're all right there for you. And they're not going to get wet either, which is good. Did you know that they use robots to sort and fill these pill packs separately for each customer? Computerized robots, and each packet is dispensed in the pharmacy, is sent through an image recognition system that they have built to ensure that the right pill is in the right pack. The system can detect dispensing accuracy by size, shape, color, density of each pill, catalogs an image of every single packet dispensed so you know you're safe. And each packet is checked by a pharmacist for accuracy and interactions prior to shipment. This is just like going to your local pharmacy, except you don't have to go to your local pharmacy. If you ever have any questions, the pharmacists are available for you 24/7 from the privacy of your own home. Try going to Walgreens at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, good luck with that. No more long lines either, or the awkward pharmacy encounters. You know, that guy standing behind you, is he listening to you? No problem with that. With PillPack, they proactively contact your doctor as well to manage your refills for you so you never run out. Switching couldn't be easier. You can sign up on the secure site. They'll take care of everything for you. Compatible with most insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. No extra costs beyond your standard copays, and you always get free shipping. Recognized by Time Magazine as a top 25 invention, Jill Duffy gave it a great review in PC Magazine. They named PillPack an editor's choice. Health Service is also a PillPack medication reminder app for your iPhone and Apple Watch. PillPack is changing the way you're going to take your medications and over-the-counters. They brought the pharmacy into the digital age, and once you make the switch, I'm telling you, you'll wonder how you lived without it. Here's what I want you to do. Visit PillPack.com/twit. You can sign up right now. The site is beautiful. It only takes a few minutes to sign up, like 5 minutes or so, when you use the link, our link, PillPack.com/twit, and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack. You'll get an extra $20 worth of vitamins and over-the-counter stuff. So a great bonus. PillPack.com/twit. You will change the way you you take your medications. Now let's move from RXs to DXs and see what Valerie's got going for us tonight.
Good segue. Love it. Hey, well,
I am a professional.
As you can see behind me, we're going to talk about national parks on the air. And there's only one person I could interview for that. And that's Sean Kutzko with the ARRL. I had a chance to catch up with him earlier last week before he started heading on down to Hamcation for this weekend. So go ahead and roll that, Brian. Well, hello, everybody. We're joined today with Sean Kutzko. He is the PR guru over at the ARRL. So what's your official title?
I'm the media and public relations manager at ARRL.
And I remember you from the days when you were the contest guy. So yes. Congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you.
I bet it's a lot more fun.
Yeah, I get to have my fingers in lots of different aspects of ham radio now, not just contesting. So,
and I bet you've been busy because you had the centennial event, and now what's the big event you got going on this year?
National Parks on the Air. It's the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service, and we've got a small role to play in that, and we're having a lot of fun with it.
And it seems like a lot of people who are activating and chasing are having fun as well. As a matter of fact, I got my little map, so
it
I'm all ready
great.
To go.
I got one in my office, too. It's a nice map.
It is very nice. So kind of tell a little bit about National Parks on the Air and just kind of give an overview for the folks that aren't aware of that.
Well, again, this is the centennial anniversary of the National Park Service, and they've been pushing this for quite a while. And I've had the idea of having national parks be a unit that ham radio operators can activate, especially with this being the NPS centennial. So we devised this program to allow portable operations from National Park Service units across the country. There are 483 units within the National Park Service that qualify for National Parks on the Air. We've been working to get this organized for pretty much a year and a half, so it's nice to finally see this all come to fruition.
Now, it's been going on for just a little over a month. Now, how many activations have there been and QSOs, and what are your totals right now?
Well, we just compiled information for the month of January, and we've had 243 out of those 483 units activated with just over 600 unique activations, and a total of about 71,000 QSOs have been uploaded to Logbook of the World for National Parks on the Air. So if that trend continues, we're looking at breaking 1 million Qs for National Parks on the Air in 2016.
That's amazing. I know when the ARRL Centennial ended, that left a big hole, and people were craving this kind of thing. So it's great that you came out with this idea to do this. Now, if somebody wants to activate a park, what are some of the steps they need to do in order to do that?
Well, the main thing to keep in mind is that there was a lot of negotiation with the National Park Service in Washington, but there is no formal agreement in place between National Park Service and the American Radio Relay League for this event. So the best thing that you can do if you want to activate a park is to contact the park office directly and get permission to transmit amateur radio from their park. We're getting a lot of feedback from various park units all throughout the system at this point that by and large, they're okay with it. If somebody wants to do a larger activation with a large group of people or a whole club where there's going to be a large display on hand or larger antennas, then you really need to work with the park in question and make sure that everything's okay, especially for the smaller parks or parks that may be in urban locations. Remember, National Parks on the Air is not just about the 59 national parks throughout the United States. There are battlefields, there are historic sites, there are seashores, rivers, trails. There are all different kinds of units, and some of those units, especially the historic sites and the monuments, some of those are located in very urban areas. So getting an antenna set up in some of those areas can be a little tricky. So you want to make sure that you coordinate with the Park Service unit in question.
Now, do they require special use permits for these larger groups?
There's a lot of discussion about that. I was on a conference call with one of the communications groups for the National Park Service about 2 weeks ago, and the general feeling is that if it's a smaller operation, say one or two people that are operating from their car in a unit's parking lot, generally speaking, there probably doesn't need to be a special use permit for that. If it's a larger operation, like I just described a minute ago, a special use permit would probably be required. But again, that is up to the discretion of each individual NPS unit.
Now, once they get approval and they're all good to go, what should they do next in order to let the world know that they're going to be on the air?
Well, at our website for National Parks on the Air, which is ARRL.org/NPOTA, there is a link to an area called the leaderboard. And the leaderboard is tracking all of the statistical information about how many contacts with parks you've made and how many activations you've made. The National Parks on the Air program has two tracks, one for chasers, which are the people who collect all of the National Parks on the Air units, and then there is a track for activators. That's the track for the people who actually go out to the units and transmit from the parks. We keep track of how many units are worked and how many parks you transmit from. And one of the best ways that you can let people know that you're going to be active from a park is on the leaderboard, there is an area for an activations calendar, and you can post your activation information on that calendar. You don't have to if you don't want to, but we strongly recommend it because that's where all the big chasers for National Parks on the Air are looking for information about which parks are going to be on.
Now, also, I noticed in that leaderboard area, there's some forms you can download that will kind of give you all the parks on the air. You can actually sort it by code, and so you can find out what state they're in, so you can aim your beam that way, right? I find this very handy, and I sort of check them off as I go, you know, if I work somebody. So I got a long way to go, though.
Oh yeah, there's quite a few people who have quite a distance to go. I myself have only, I think I've only worked like 28 or 29 of them so far. But no, your point is well taken. On the leaderboard area, we have a list of all of the units, you can sort those by the unit name. You can sort them by state. You can sort them by the alphanumeric designator, you know, NP62 or whatever the case may be. So you can sort that list in any way that you are comfortable, and then you can print that right off of our website. On the National Parks on the Air Facebook group, there have been several people who have uploaded units lists in various forms, and you can, if you subscribe to the Facebook group and you join that group, there are forms there that you can download from the files area in the Facebook group as well.
And that Facebook group is great. I'm a member of that group because people will let you know when they're going to be active, so that helps too, instead of just relying on spotting networks. Now, once they're all done operating from these parks, what's their next step in order for us to get confirmation? Because I think if they just do a regular LOTW upload, it's going to look like I work them from their house, correct? Mm-hmm.
That's correct. It's important to remember that National Parks on the Air is completely administered through Logbook of the World. So for people to get credit for your activation from one of these National Parks on the Air units, you need to upload your log to Logbook of the World. That's how all of this statistical data is compiled. When an activator uploads their log in the process where you choose a station location, we now have all 483 National Parks on the Air units listed as part of the station location. So if you were to operate from Yosemite National Park, you would be able to choose that as part of your station location when you sign and upload your log as an activator. Chasers don't need to add any park information to the logs that they upload to Logbook of the World. The confirmation is handled entirely by the activator who transmits from the park signing their log with a park as part of their station location, and that's how the confirmation for that park is given during the matching process in Logbook. You're welcome to exchange QSL cards as part of National Parks on the Air if you want. I've already received plenty of cards myself for some of the activations that I've done and others that I've worked, but paper QSL cards do not count towards activator and chaser totals. In order to get credit for those units, you need to confirm it through Logbook of the World.
Well, this has been very informative. Hopefully everybody out there is going to get out there and activate or chase. I know we're planning an activation from LK01, which is the Apostle Islands. We're going there at the end of July. We have a campsite with power, so that'll be good. We got our permission. We have about 5 operators so far. So,
oh, that's going to be great.
Yeah, I will videotape my adventures for everybody. So thank you so much for joining us, Sean. I appreciate you taking the time out to let everybody know about this great event.
You're welcome. And if anybody has any questions, we're going to Norm Fusaro, W3IZ, will be giving a presentation, National Parks on the Air, at the Orlando Hamcation this coming weekend. So stop by the booth and see us. We'd be happy to talk to you.
Sounds great. Thank you again.
Thank you.
All right. Hopefully you guys get on the air, activate, or chase. As far as DX goes, not a lot of really rare DX going on right now. The rarest out there right now is 7 Papa 8 Charlie, and that's Lesotho. They're located right by South Africa, so aim your beam towards South Africa. And they're going to be on there till February 17th. So get out there and work those guys. As far as the contest goes, this weekend is a real big one. It's WPX Ritty Contest. It starts Friday night, runs through Sunday night. Although if you're going to be a single operator, you are allowed to operate only 30 hours of the 48-hour contest. So, but multi-ops can do all 48 hours. And what's unique about this contest is you get the multipliers are not different countries. The multipliers are the prefixes. So each new prefix up to your letters up to including your number. So November Victor 9 Lima NV9 is a prefix. So if you work me, I'm a multiplier. And then later, should you work a NV9 X-ray, that's going to count towards your QSO totals and your points. It's just not going to be a multiplier. But if you work November Victor 8 Lima, that's a whole new multiplier. So those of you out there that have a rare prefix, this is a really good contest to get on the air for because you will be the rare DX that everyone's going to be, you're going to be sought after. Now, if you see those point totals there, you know, the further away your contact, obviously, in different continents, you're going to get 3 points. If it's same different country, same continent, 2 points, same country, 1 point. And if you work any stations any of that on 40 or 80, you double those totals. So it's really a lot of fun, a lot of multipliers to get. And those of you who don't even have a license or maybe you just have your tech, you can even play because there's a category for shortwave listeners. So just go to that website with the link I showed you there and you can get all the rules. That's all I've got for now. Well, we can never get enough of Don, so I'm going to head it back to Don.
Yeah, liar. We can never get enough. Yeah, I've never heard that before. All right, I want to talk about something that's pretty cool. It's a doorbell. What's so special about a doorbell? Well, this doorbell is the Ring doorbell, and it has video and audio, and you can communicate with it via your smartphone from anywhere in the world. Everybody knows what a doorbell sounds like. It means, well, you know, someone's bringing you a package, friends are coming over for dinner, but it could also be the sound of someone planning to break into your house and take all the stuff that you worked so hard to earn the money to buy. Over 95% of home break-ins happen during the day, and they almost always start by ringing your doorbell to see if you're home. Nobody comes to the door. Well, they figure, okay, let's get in there and start pillaging. Well, with the Ring video doorbell, you can see and talk to anybody at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It has advanced motion detection. It will alert you even if someone doesn't ring the doorbell, and it makes this neat little wind chime sound when the motion detector is tripped. There it is. That's what it sounds like. That's exactly what it sounds like. And in fact, the other night we had some severe weather come through, and we were in a severe weather warning. Now, I slept right through it, but I got up and I looked at my phone and it said motion detected at 1:06 a.m. I'm like, well, that's weird. So I hit the button on my phone and I look at the video and I can see and hear the rain and the stuff that's blowing around. We've got a chair hanging chair right in front of our doorbell. And when the wind blows it a lot, it trips the doorbell. Here, this is my back porch. Watch this real quick. Yeah. Dawn's talking to Tyler.
What?
What are you doing?
Nothing, Mom.
Oh, look at you with your hat on. They gave you that.
No, I didn't show it.
Why are you so embarrassed and took it off?
All right, well, what do you need?
I was just calling to say hi.
Okay.
Mima just left me a little while ago. That's why she couldn't pick you up. Go put your hat up before you get it all filthy dirty. I'll talk to you later. Go put your hat up before you get it all dirty.
I'm not getting dirty.
All right, love you.
Love you.
Bye.
That's his ROTC officer's hat. And so that's the cool thing about Ring is chances are no one's going to break into your home. But if they do, you've got that. But the cool thing is, you know, I can see when my son comes home from school. Of course, I work in New Orleans, 65 miles away from home, so I can tell when he's home. He can hit the doorbell and talk to me via the doorbell, or I can hear the chime, hit my phone and see that he's out there, and I can talk to him. I can also tell when he's fed the dogs. Did you feed the dogs today, son? Yeah, Dad, I sure did. Really? Well, let's go to the video and see. Okay, I'm going to go feed them now. That's the cool thing about the Ring video doorbell. You can talk to delivery people, keep an eye on your package. If someone tries to mess with it, you get the instant alert, the HD video thing. You can also, like this, you know, mess with your son and embarrass him on internet television. So it's like having a neighbor keep an eye on your home 24/7. It's also kind of like having a babysitter. It only takes minutes to install, and it works with either your current wiring or built-in rechargeable battery. That's how I do it. So put your mind at ease. Protect your home with the video doorbell. Time Magazine and USA Today named one of their top 10 gadgets of 2015. Go to ring.com/hamnation. You will get free expedited FedEx shipping. ring.com/hamnation. Seriously, you need to have one of these things. It's besides just the cool factor, it's a little more security for you. And, you know, and if you got kids, you can mess with them. And with Ring, you're always home. Val, let's get into you've been taking some questions from the chat room for us tonight in Amanda's absence. Let's get into that, shall we?
Yes, I have. And I'm sorry. Hopefully you get better, Amanda, because you do such a better job at this than me. But I do have a question for you, Bob, if Bob's still with us. Kilo One Alpha Uniform Sierra. Her name is Roxy. She wanted to know if you've ever read Walter Maxwell's book, Reflections, and if so, what did you think?
Oh, I have the book. I haven't read all of it. I read pieces of it, but I've had many conversations with Walter before he passed away. He always would come by and see us at Dayton. Yeah, he was a great guy, and sorry to miss all those great knowledgeable heads that we lose from time to time here in this hobby. But Walter was a great guy. And glad that you have the book, but I'll have to just find some time to read some of that stuff.
Very good. All right. I also have a question for you, George, if you're still with us. Let's see. I didn't put the call sign down. Someone in the chat room, they have a Dell Precision 670, and he keeps getting the diagnostic light saying that, reading that there's a problem with his power supply. Now, the unit's getting power, And he's checked all his connections. Is there anything else he can try before going out and buying a whole new power supply?
Well, I've never owned a Dell, so.
Okay. power supply is a power supply. I mean.
Yeah, they're not that expensive. I don't know what warning light he's talking about, so I'm not really sure. But you can get a power supply tester, but, you know, those are almost as much as you can buy a cheap supply these days.
Okay. Also have another one for you probably, George. I'll answer a little bit too. Whiskey Alpha 5 Alpha Zulu Quebec Michael. He's going to be making a 6-meter dipole and he's going to be using speaker wire and he wanted to know if he should pull it apart into two pieces. Now, my first antenna, I use speaker wire but I made a loop and I did separate mine out. You know, it's got the two insulated wires and I separated mine out to make the loop. But I know with a dipole, maybe you could probably still keep it together as long as you solder the end of it. Is that right, George?
Yeah, you could. I guess it really depends on how much strength you thought you were going to need with it. You know, if one strand is enough to do it, well, yeah, go ahead and strip it in half. 6 meters is not that long, so you know that would probably be fine, unless you're going to run just a whole lot of power. One strand's probably enough.
All right. Last question is for me. Let's see. Kilo Delta 8 Yankee Victor Juliet. Chris wanted to know which one was my favorite contest. And I always have a soft spot in my heart for CQ Worldwide Sideband because that's a contest where I met the love of my life. We met on 10 meters in CQ Worldwide Sideband back in 2011. So that's my favorite contest. That's all I've got for questions. Tonight on the nets, we got 14.268 on 20 meters. Steve's taking check-ins. In EchoLink, do drop in. It's 355-800. And I just tried to tune around on the band to see exactly where the 40-meter net was, and I didn't hear him. Maybe you guys know where he's at right now.
W7UDI in the chat room says 7282.
There you go. That's all I've got. Get well quickly, Amanda.
Yeah. We miss you, Amanda.
Answer right here. There's how you do your 6-meter dipole.
Oh,
doesn't
there you go.
Doesn't make any difference. There you go, right there. I just drew it up for him. There you go. And it's real simple. 468 divided by the frequency. And Don, I got something for you. Not only did I see Fifi, I got to ride in that booger in the bombardier seat.
Oh, man. Yeah, I wanted to ride in Fifi so bad it just wasn't in my budget. But you know, all the money that they take for those rides, and they're not cheap, but the money, they're well worth it because you know, when else are you going to have a chance to ride in a restored World War II bomber? All the money that they collect, it goes back to the Commemorative Air Force to help in the restoration and the upkeep of those things because. Those airplanes are not inexpensive to operate. So, wow, I am envious. That's an amazing aircraft.
Well, they came through Springfield. I did a show here in 2012. Go back and look at it. We had a really nice interview with all of them. Would have been somewhere after August of 2012. And they were here for 4 days because they had trouble with it, and they had trouble with the radios. And Lonnie, a really good friend of ours, W0GZQ, and Dean, who lives south of me here a couple of miles, K6BGW, we helped him fix the radio. And so we had a lot of fun inside Fifi. And then I purchased a ticket because I wanted to support them. And I not only got a ticket, but I was up in the front end of the Bombardier. It was great. The video turned out pretty good, too. But, yes, everybody, support Fifi. Find out if it's in your area. Well, I hope you all agree. This was a great show. There was a ton of information in this show. And we appreciate everybody, George and Randy and Don keeping Tamitha and Newsline together. And, of course, Valerie, all your great information. That was a wonderful interview. So keep it all together. We'll see you back here next week. Tell all your friends where we are, Ham Nation into Google. That's all you need to do, and they'll find them all. And we'll come back next week, and who knows what will happen. I think Gordo will be back, so he'll have some pictures of Hamcation. Until then. We will see you on the bands somewhere. I'm going to be on AM because all my big radios are gone. I got to hook them all back up. But I hope it was worth it. It was fun for me to show you how I use a light bulb to tune things up. I really don't, but I did years ago. And once in a while when I test things like this, it's kind of fun to go back to the old days. Bye-bye, everybody. We'll see you next week. From the Ozarks, this is K9EID.